Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin. With guest co-host
Imran Siddiqui.
When I was on this podcast, we didn't have these fancy YouTube live streams.
No, that's true. We streamlined the process just a bit since then.
Yeah,
ever since I took over.
Welcome to the 287th edition of Polycast. I'm Dan Q, and I'm joined by Makalua.
I still need more coffee. I also need to kick my computer. Why are you so slow?
Sometimes there are questions that you really don't want an answer to. The main team.
Finally, a civ that can get on our level.
Thanks, Nick Jonas. Imagine.
Yeah, I'm just going to be in the corner sleeping again.
That's you in the corner, losing sleep.
West Coast co-host.
And joined by guest co-host Imran Siddiqui.
I was promised there'd be cake.
Didn't you know the cake is a lie?
I should have guessed.
It's kind of scary that was a current joke at one point during the existence of this panel.
It's true.
Also, when you're old.
Yes, Imran was an original co-host on Polycast when we started 11 years ago. It kind of feels like every month of the year is a year in internet years. So it's been a really, really long time.
Yeah. In other terms, we've been around since the Dark Ages at this point.
And after having been a regular co-host for 3 years, Imran was last a guest on episode 85. So 202 episodes later, congratulations on now being at the top of the list of the longest time between guest appearances. How does this make you feel?
I don't know if top of the list is the way.
No, I don't think that counts. Because he wasn't a guest back then.
On episode 85, he was.
Yeah.
Was he already no longer a regular?
That's right.
I don't think that counts.
We do not have 5 regulars.
Also, I did warn Dan that I still don't really play Civ much. He said, that's fine, though I have played Civ 6.
Well, you're not playing Civ is part of your profile. So.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. And I read all of the links, which is something I never used to do. So.
Whoa. Wow.
Are we sure it's really Imran?
Okay, I take that back. He is a guest, because I certainly didn't do that.
In the news, of course, in between episodes, they decided to release another DLC Civ, right after recording a podcast.
Well, that's how we know it's a legitimate release, because we're non-recording week, so
mm-hmm.
That's good. Yeah, so now we have Nubia added. I'm not going to try and make a mangle of pronouncing their leader name, but civilization ability is Tassetti, where they get 50 production towards range units. All range units gain 50% experience. Their mines over strategic resources gain 1 production, and mines over luxury and bonus resources gain 2 gold, which kind of relates to them having their unique unit, which is apparently it's a +5 archer, or somebody down in the front went, Nubian archer rush.
Yeah, it's on the archer, it's 70 production now, although in general all archers got 10 extra production. So it's 70 production for the archer, and it's 30 range strength. So
the crossbow, so you can have some spam out a lot early, give him super experience, and then turn him on the crossbow. And in case there's anybody left, you had to wreck it with an early archer rush.
Yeah, I don't know if you need to, because you're already at 30, and that's about what crossbows are.
Yeah. I was like,
and you have 3 movement, so you can step on the hill and shoot rather than step on the hill and wait.
Yeah.
And on the whole mines over strategic resources side, people have checked, and Nubia also gets a minor, very, very minor, starting position bonus towards any mineable thing.
Oh.
It's the smallest possible starting bias, so it's not like Scythia sitting right next to horses every single time, because they need horses. This is just very, very low and general. You will probably start near something that's mineable. So if you don't see one, it might just be uranium.
Well, I know that some people were wondering if they would start next to deserts because they seem to be a very deserty type of civ.
Giving them proximity to desert and their start bias.
Yeah. Build 3 to 4 slingers depending on how much gold you can build up for upgrades to their archers, and then just use those to wreck face and just keep spamming archers. That's it. That's all you need.
You have to send your one warrior or spearman or whatever to go and actually march in the city. And
yeah, I'd take the chariot because it can go 3 move as well. So at least if you're on some flat line, it can keep up with the archers.
True.
Or a scout, just to make fun of them by taking cities with scouts.
It's always the best thing to take.
Even on Deity, Nubia Archer Rush is just horribly powerful. So beyond powerful. Because you take that plus 50% production towards range units, you throw in your policy, that gives you another 50%, so you get plus 100.
Yeah.
And then you just crank out archers every 3 turns-ish, depending on how high of a pop you got before you got to archers.
You can get promotions like Incendiary pretty fast, too, for the
walls. Yeah, insanely fast.
They would actually be weaker on online speed than standard speed because of the whole movement and versus production attack rate thing.
Yeah, you'd be able to spam out more on online speed without the promotion because it's cheaper, but somebody would get to knights by the time that rolls around for the promotion side of it.
But yeah, like you said, you're moving in the archers and you can get onto, say, hill for added defense when it's going to get whacked, say, the next turn, but move onto the hill, shoot, fire, still be a hex out, and then, as you say, move in a chariot to finish that because it'll have the extra move. And then by the time you're able to upgrade them to crossbowmen, I've already had situations where, well, I've already got some archers that can actually fire twice in a turn. And barbs, who cares about barbs? Well.
Yeah. Just, don't mind this, just wrecked everything.
The Nubian Pyramid, they can build it on desert hills, or floodplains. It gives faith and as well as additional yield based on the adjacent districts of food for the city center.
So you get 1 faith for the pyramid, and you get 1 food for being next to the city center, and then you get 1 of yield type for whatever specialty district is next to the pyramid. So if you surround the pyramid with 6 districts, the pyramid will get a lot of yields. But then those districts will probably all be pretty crap on their own adjacency bonuses, so
Yeah, and then it feeds sort of with the leader ability there, which is 40% increase to production to districts if there's a Nubian pyramid next to your city center.
Yep.
And otherwise, you got a base plus 20% production.
20%, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the best, given the current mechanics, one of the best bonuses in the game.
Yes.
Snowball.
Yeah, we'll talk about what's still not addressed in the patch, but anyway.
Well, one of the things I read when I was going through the forum, I guess the kind of conspiracy theory, right, that a lot of these DLC civs are ramped up in terms of abilities because they want you to buy the DLC, which...
Yeah, I don't think that's a conspiracy. That's just quantitatively, you look at the DLC civs, and then you look at the base game civs, and you're like, yeah.
Basic game reality.
Yeah.
The Nubian Pyramid, if you're not going to surround it with a bunch of yields, then slap one down next to your city center, if possible. Build all the districts you're ever going to build, and then remove the Nubian Pyramid later to slip into, like, a Wonder or some other district. Because the main thing about it is to give you that extra district bonus. So if you don't need it later, you can just switch it.
If it's not taking up a space that you want to use otherwise, then, yeah, you can just leave it alone. But at some point, okay, I've got the benefit from you. I don't need you anymore, or even all the extra values that you're getting from working that hex. It's like, well, it's a drop in the bucket compared to what the rest of my empire is doing. I like to construct this wonder now because it's going to get me that much farther ahead. It's served its purpose.
Yep.
If you really want to, you can probably do the math and decide whether you're going to come out ahead or behind based on your future districts and when you expect to build them.
So, yeah, this is one of the first unique improvements that you have to consider when you remove it.
If ever.
And it's always nice when there's a unique improvement that we get excited about as well, other than just the novelty of constructing it because you can.
Yeah. And the other thing to do is just don't build it next to your city center. It talks about next to the city center in a few places, but you can build more than one per city. So you can always build one out in the, like, third ring of a city where it's adjacent to a bunch of other cities and then surround it with a similar set of districts.
put all your industry districts right next to the pyramid from three different cities, and then you get plus three production on that pyramid.
And, of course, yes, there are the typical responses to Nubia being announced. Obviously, first about the, oh, why is this particular part of Africa being represented again? Or requisite, oh, it's a female leader. Why all the female leaders? Or, of course, the kind of, oh, well, she's fat. I don't like this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just like, really, Civ community? I don't think we need to fall into that.
Did you see Civ 3, Catherine? Come on, man. It's fine.
Yeah, because how many of the male leaders were fat and nobody complained about that?
Anubia is a new, brand new Civ to the entire series, right?
Yep.
It absolutely is. And, of course, yes, we're going to be talking about the Civ 6 Summer 2017 update that rolled along with Nubia. But first, about how about documenting the undocumented? Before we get to the official change list, there were things undocumented. And, of course, that never happens in a Civ patch. Oh, wait, that happens all
nope.
the time.
Never happens in any strategy game patch.
Any game will stop.
Well, that's true. Although some of the less complex games have less of this by extension of just there being fewer changes per patch. Anyway, Lily Lancer is the one who started the thread that is documenting some of these. It may or may not be inclusive, but it's certainly a start, as there are a number of them on the thread. And Lily Lancer did mention that further updates will come as found. Plantations have extra gold by baseline, and then you get more from globalization. Nuclear lover agenda is bugged. They say I don't think this is an undocumented change. I think this is an introduction of a bug. Leaders with the nuclear lover agenda tend to denounce you for not having nuclear weapons in the ancient era. Like, that doesn't sound like an intentional change to me.
Yeah.
That's a whoops, we forgot a flag somewhere.
Okay, so as part of the documented interactions with battering rams and siege engines, I wish there was a modern equivalent of them. Mm. I don't like that they disappear like a melee into city option completely, but it was kind of ridiculous to break walls with helicopters using battering rams. Corey gets a bit more gold from banking. Cartography gives two gold to fishing boats instead of one. One day fishing boats will be good, maybe. Mercantile gives two hammers to camps instead of one hammer, so you're getting a little bit more extra yield from tech undocumented for a number of tile improvements. Just something to keep in mind as we're going down the list. All right, city-state elimination no longer counts as a meeting. What? I don't understand. What was this tree?
That was a bug.
It was
that
a
was
bug.
A full bug. So yeah. This is a bug fix.
Yeah.
Basically, if you met a city-state, every city state after that that had the elimination pop up counted as meeting them.
Oh, okay. So, this, you is could get a, your this is a hidden bug fix.
Yeah, so you could get your political philosophy eureka just for the AIs wiping out the city states.
Okay.
Lily says, so the eureka of political philosophy becomes hard to achieve now. No, it just means it's not stupid easy to get into that.
Yeah.
You just means you have to explore.
If you build a scouter, you can find city states on most map types. Some map types, I guess larger versions, if you had like a bigger version of Four Leaf or you have like city states out in the water or some crap and you're not prioritizing it, then yeah, okay. But it's not that hard to find them.
Yeah, unless the AI ate them already, but whatever.
All right, Aurora, visual effects in polar areas. Okay, I mean, I guess, yeah, go look for the pretties, I guess.
Ooh, shiny.
Wasn't really there also the desert mountains look different now?
AI begin fixing spaceports. What? They try a little bit more than previously, but still not very much? Okay. All right. Sea resources no longer count as resources that belong to a continent. I fixed the grammar there as I read it.
Each continent is supposed to be given a certain amount of luxuries, depending on map size. And sea resources were being considered part of that, but that would leave you a problem if you weren't coastal on that continent. So you wouldn't get a bunch of luxuries. So it looks like all the sea resources, including the strategic ones, so oil, no longer being counted as part of the continental makeup.
So you're going to see proportionately more continental resources based on the sea resources, in effect.
Yeah, it also means you'll see proportionately more sea resources because since they're not being tied to a continent, they're not getting limited as much.
Another help for coastal cities. It's getting there. Maybe one day.
Yeah, and of course, as we all need to keep in mind, a continent does not necessarily mean an individual landmass, the end, or a directly connected landmass either.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and this is mentioning the Nubia starting bias that Matt alluded to earlier. Walls grant 1 tourism, medieval 2, and renaissance 3 after conservation, and you can still build walls after conservation, apparently. So you can get more tourism than previously by spamming walls. And finally on this list, Bastion and Limes, as well as Rams and Towers, still obsolete at public works. Okay.
Yep. So at some point, you stop building walls.
Yeah. And you might actually go back to building artillery in the mid to late game again instead of just using rams and infantry and such.
Yeah. Yeah, the urban defense now popping up at steel, so it's in the tech tree again, and actually showing up at a point where it makes more sense, because civil engineering randomly, therefore I know how to, wait, what? No more civil engineering random pop of walls way too early.
Yeah.
Also, that means you might have to build a Renaissance wall at some point. Well,
unless you're the one attacking.
Yeah, probably not, but the AI might build Renaissance walls now more.
Anything to give something that's already in the game a more useful means for being constructed if we're not going to actually get rid of it is a good thing. You know, you never want it to be, you always construct this, but you also never want it to be, no, you never construct that, it's wasted, because you're going to get that benefit and more once you reach this frickin' civic. And that was bad. So yeah, Civ 6 Summer 2017 update. Huh. A patch to go along with new DLC? Wow, there's absolutely no precedent.
We never do that.
Oh wait, yes there is. And yes, it is only available for PC players, coming soon for Mac and Linux, quote-unquote, from 2K. And
yes, Shafted.
There's one new feature in particular that a number of you have been asking for. I'm reading directly from the preface from 2K on the Steam announcement. A restart button to regenerate the map using your current game settings.
Woohoo!
Thank you for bringing that back to the series, by the way. And the ability to save game configuration settings for future games. And you can save more than one game configuration setting as well. In addition, there are balance changes to district costs, some Civ-specific adjustments, and a warning when your cities can bombard nearby enemy units. So, other than Nubia, which of course we've talked about, general balance changes. I have no intention of reading all of these. There are some things that are more worthwhile than others, as much as people love to hear me monologue, myself included. So, in terms of districts, you're reducing the cost of an aqueduct by 30%. Sewers by 50, and reduce costs of all other districts by 10%, which, of course, plays wonderfully well into Nubia. Why am I thinking of Nubia?
Did you want Nubia to be slightly more OP?
And Australia's like, hey, but I'm still OP, right? Shh, Australia, you're okay. You're just the toddler now. This is the baby. We're giving the baby some attention. Get over yourself.
Yes.
Yeah, besides, this is the summer patch notes, and in Australia, it's winter, so.
That's right. All these are hibernating.
Increase the discount for districts you have from 25 to 40%. Hello. But increased cost of district buildings by 10%, except aerodrome buildings, and increased per-settler cost bump by 50%. Well, okay, well, there is that civic that's going to give you a 15% production towards settlers, and you could also buy them as well. Elsewise, not just for Phil, but I'm going to call it the just for Phil, battering ram and siege tower now upgrade to the medic support unit and no longer are functional against a city with urban defenses.
There needs to be a modern version of the battering ram. I don't care what you make it. It'd be...
Yeah, can't you have some sort of support artillery or something like that? Because we don't use battering rams these days. We just drop really big bombs.
Or just, like, upgrade them to, like, zappers or something, and then upgrade them again to something else. It's fine.
Yeah, I just kind of view that as, okay, so now the equivalent is a bomber. Or a jet bomber, but no, there should be something land-based as well.
The problem is you have these ranged units that are awful in movement and need help just to outrange the city, which they're designed to counter, and take a while to bring down the city. Meanwhile, you have these enormously strong melee units that can just crush the thing, but they're somehow magically walled off. Even modern infantry regiments could probably bust walls if there's nothing else opposing them. So I'm okay with the idea of needing better support than a battering ram to take cities in the Renaissance and later. That's perfectly reasonable. but I don't like that there's nothing.
Yeah, so you can bring yourself an observation balloon to give yourself that extra range, but yeah, they're going to still be sitting there a long while trying to bombard the city defenses down, and even the AI is eventually going to be able to get in there and squish those things. There's only so many turns you can protect it before they come in, unless they've been completely wiped out in terms of units, and you're just sitting there. It's like the new end turn. Oh, the Civ is dead, except I got to bombard the walls. Oh.
The main issue in my mind is the congestion. Now you have an extra unit type that is not a support unit, so in contrast to battering rams and stuff, you have to drag this crap around, drag the observation balloons attached to them around, and shoot the city with them. You can probably hit the city pretty effectively if you have a great general. You can still probably shred the defenses, but you just have more congestion and more movement issues in a game where that's already a problem. And the strength of your melee units relative to walls is less of a factor, which, I don't like that.
One other change in the general balance change, we're just going to skip ahead here just for a second. Increased cost to repair city outer defenses. In online speed, regardless of how far down my defenses have been, it's like, oh, would you like to repair them in one turn? Boom! Would you like to repair them in one turn? Boom.
Boom!
That seems like a good idea. And also on walls, speaking of walls, the medieval wall bonus for Monarchy updated the bonus to plus 50% production towards defensive buildings and plus one housing for each level of wall.
Oh.
I want to get excited by this. I do.
It's better than the old Monarchy bonus.
Well, that's true, and I'm like, okay.
Although most anything was, but...
Exactly, I'm like, okay, I'm happier. What else? Oh, Civ and leader-specific balance changes. Norway, Thunderbolt of the North, gains plus 50% production of naval melee units, and the Saved Church gains plus 1 production for all coastal resources in the city. Ah, okay.
Hey!
Helps them a little.
It's actually unique now.
It is unique, and that is useful. Thank you. Spain, a treasure fleet civ ability, has its goal for international trade boosted from plus 4 to plus 6, and a mission increased from plus 1 science to plus 2 science if next to a campus. Ooh. Now, if you could just make the mission available a little earlier...
That might be a little more helpful.
We're making progress. I'm trying to look at the glass half full, not half empty. Scythia, peel down from 50 to 30. Congo, 50% more great people points rather than double. Yes, Greece, award an envoy whenever they complete an Acropolis.
Oh.
Whenever they complete a unique district that's already half cost.
Yeah. Although I didn't notice that anything that the Acropolis used to have as bonuses is no longer there. They used to have extra culture, like a lot of extra culture, for being built next to the city center. That doesn't really exist anymore. It's more of a swap out.
It is. I do like the idea of an envoy awarding. There are some city-states that I would like to beat the suzerain of, but most of the time it's, hey, can I get another envoy so I can get to the tier 1, tier 3, tier 6 of the envoys in the city? Plus the fact that, oh, I'm sorry, are you the suzerain of my enemy? That's okay, I'll instantly declare peace with you and I can get that. And, oh, I can get another envoy and then I can run the diplomatic civic that I get another gold a turn for that? Yes, that sounds very nice. Thank you very much. France. Catherine's Flying Squadron now awards a free spy when the extra capacity is earned at castles. All spies start as agents with a free promotion.
Ooh.
She becomes a bit of a bother pretty quick.
Yeah. Like the first sentence, I'm like, uh-huh. Free promotion to start with? Oh, okay.
Oh, boy.
Sounds like a fantastic MP troll civ.
That civ is now banned in Turncast. No kidding. you're playing your cards too soon.
Map gen. Aluminum can show up on planes.
And you get more lakes. More lakes.
Yes.
Than previously.
Actually, the more lakes is kind of nice, especially because of Huey.
I do like my jet bombers.
I do like not having to work the desert just to get aluminum.
UI are, of course, user interface enhancements. Civilpedia now shows the number of spies or envoys granted by a civic.
Oopidoo.
That is particularly helpful.
That's nice. Just let me throw out there, the UI is still hot garbage.
Glass half full, Phil. Glass half full.
Element words here. It has done nothing to deal with number of inputs and factions.
Actually,
it just added some inputs.
I think in this particular patch, the UI went backwards a little bit because there's plenty of tooltips that used to be in the game that are not anymore.
Yeah. A glaring issue in the game that has gone close to a year now with barely being touched to the point where I'm willing to call that pathetic.
Yeah, the UI...
It's alpha levels of controls in a retail game. I stand by that.
Yeah, I don't really believe that, because at least we have key mapping now.
Okay.
It's all good because key mapping.
Yep.
There are previous versions of Civ that allowed you to quickly manage double, triple, quadruple the number of cities in the same number of time as you can in Civ 6.
Well,
and that has nothing to do with stacking. They should probably try a little bit with their user interface. That's all I'm saying, is they should try to bring it out of alpha.
I will now read another item under UI enhancements that's out of the order I was saying and has absolutely no connection whatsoever to what Phil just said. Trade route chooser automatically selects previously completed trade routes.
Yes, that's helpful.
That's a start.
Yeah.
What I don't like, actually, from the UI enhancements myself, a pop-up box is now used to modify deal item values.
Yeah.
Why does there have to be this extra pop-up for that? It's another level that is not necessary. It worked fine.
Yep.
Please remove that.
Yeah, it wasn't needed to be a pop-up.
You just need more inputs. That's what will make the game better from a UI perspective. Just add to the number of inputs per turn. That's great.
And not only is it a pop-up, but it's shifted elsewhere on the screen from where I would be inputting the value otherwise. It's not even a pop-up on top of. It's pop-up and over to the side. And I'm like, why can't I input the number? Oh, you're over there. Why are you... Added relationships tab to city-state intel reports, which displays that city-state's at war status with other civs and city-states. Yes. Thank you. Diplomacy enhancements. Added tooltips explaining why you can or cannot declare each kind of war or undertake another diplomatic action. Yes.
That was actually okay.
That's a good one.
Now instead of not listing your CVs because you weren't available, they actually list your CVs and then tell you how to...
make it available.
Yeah.
As opposed to, pretty sure I just got diplomatic service, why is that not an option? Oh, and it's a grayed out option, but it's actually on the screen.
Yeah.
Speaking of confirmation, are you sure you want to denounce confirmation at
it's rough.
Have more pop-ups. You needed more inputs per turn.
The only time I like that notion, and that's really just for the lulls in a cooperative-ish game. Oh, sorry, I accidentally denounced you when I went to talk to you for a trade. But that's just for the lulls. We don't need that other confirmation otherwise. We just get by it.
If I bother to go into the diplomacy screen to denounce somebody, yeah, I'm pretty sure I want to denounce them.
At least with something like this, it's not something you do dozens of times per game, so you don't get dozens of confirmations. So it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But, man.
Although, speaking of in-game notifications, if you make peace with a civ, and then all of their city-states follow because perhaps you weren't paying attention that you could have gotten peace instantly, or you declare or they declare on you and you're getting notifications of all of their city-states, including, as I said before, the city-states that you didn't know where they were on the map, but now you do, maybe we could just roll that into one notification that you click on and it says, you are now at war with all of the city-states, as opposed to, hey guys, can you just give me a moment here? I got 20 notifications I want to clear so I can see the next notifications underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, so much. Just how you're presenting the information. I'm glad the information is there, but I don't need a message for every single city-state. You're not that special.
Yep.
Liberation changes. Liberating cities can now occur even if you got the city in a deal.
Yay! I've been complaining about this forever.
Huzzah! And when you liberate a city-state, your military units are only kicked back from the first ring of hexes around the city. You aren't ejected from their territory entirely.
Nah, shouldn't be really ejected at all, but...
No, shouldn't be.
Because you liberated them, right?
That's right.
The tech and civic boosts now additionally appear in the notification panel.
I did notice that last time. I was like, oh, that's great, because I would never know I got that. The pop-up was kind of annoying as opposed to it just pops up on the side now.
Yeah, of course it has a problem that you might not necessarily see the things anymore.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence tuning, and this point speaks to, I don't know, something that we've talked about on a recent episode. AI will now better handle air attacks.
Yeah.
Certainly couldn't handle it worse, really. Bombers will attack districts, improvements, and then units in that preference, and fighters will prefer to attack other air units.
Okay.
I don't know about the bombers will attack districts, improvements, and then units in that preference, only because if a unit's coming in...
Yeah, that is a bit awkward. Like, you're attacking a city with bombers in it, or an aerodrome, or whatever. Like, they should probably kill the units threatening them if it's a border conflict, rather than bombing the districts.
Well, it probably depends on where it is. If it's back at the place, they're probably not trying to districts.
They're not going to bomb their own districts. They're going to go, no. Oh, look, units, kill.
Well, I'm picturing this like you declare on a bordering AI and move units towards its bombers. It should not be bombing your districts. It should be bombing your units. Probably.
You know, probably. I've just thought of the idea that if you've taken a city in their empire, they might start bombing their own former city.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm.
They probably will. And they will do that over bombing your units.
That's what I'm concerned about here.
Yeah.
Although,
keep in mind that this is a little separate from the actual AI for taking a group of units and trying to do something. So that will probably override the preferences.
I hope so,
but
yeah.
Given the nature of some of the other areas of this patch, I wouldn't put a lot of money on it.
I wouldn't put a lot of the money on the AI doing much of anything. But
yeah.
The AI handling air attacks, if we've gone from 10% efficiency to 20% efficiency, that is better. That's true, and that is a fact.
We'll see what it looks like in practice.
Improved desire to pillage cities, you mean other than barbarians. Good. It's like barbarians, you're doing this very well, but then AI is proper, not so much. How come you're not doing that along the way? You're on my farm, you could heal. No? Fine. Squish.
This is an area of concern for me. Is the AI going to do this in lieu of taking a city it could take? Because if that's true, I don't like it. But it's something that the AI should be doing more than it does in some circumstances. And in other circumstances, it should really be taking the city as the top priority.
Yeah, no, I mean, if the AI runs up to a city that it can't take because there's walls there and it doesn't have the ability to take the wall out, then it should pillage the crap out of the city.
Yes, and that's what I'm hoping will happen when we see this in practice. But what I am fearing will happen is that the AI will see a city without walls that it could take, but its units would take some damage in the process, and they'll decide to pillage to heal rather than just taking the city.
No, what they'll probably do is pillage the crap out of the city, then take it, and then that city is totally useless.
That gives you so much time, and yeah, it makes it more difficult for them to get anything of value out of it for a long time.
Yeah, that's more the concern.
Speaking of attacking cities and whatnot, a couple of points down from that. During city attacks, concentrate unit attacks on more threatening units rather than spreading out.
Yes, actually kill the units you attack. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of important in this game to kill units rather than damaging them, giving them XP and letting them live. Yes.
Yeah.
Also, improve city planning with regards to adjacency bonuses. Ah, oh, that would be nice. Yeah.
Maybe.
That sounds pretty generic. We'll see what it does.
I mean, it may drop the districts in the correct locations a little bit more often if it's already got those areas set up. The bigger problem with adjacency bonuses is what we've talked about before. You've got an area surrounded by hills, but you haven't mined them yet. So the adjacency bonus for the best place doesn't exist. So is the AI going to trigger off of, there's five hills here, therefore I should put it there, even though it still has to put in the, I got to go mine those hills first to get the bonus. Is it going to do that, or is it just going to drop it next to the two hills somewhere else because they were already mined?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what they can do with their algorithm.
At least pre-patch. I still remember the one AI civ. It had a city that you couldn't get into this hex because it was surrounded by mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not put a campus there. They put it next to the city. So if they can think better with that than what you described, Matt, hopefully they'll be able to do that as well. I guess that sounds great, but I would just be happy for a situation where they recognize right now, without doing absolutely anything else, I placed the campus district here, and I'm going to get a whack load of adjacency bonuses, as opposed to, let's hug the city center, because I can.
Yeah.
Which probably, given the fact that that was also a few hexes out, it probably also went back to, oh, but that hex is not inside my city ring, so I guess I got to place it here, instead of, maybe you should go and acquire that tile because you can, so that you can then place the campus there.
Yep.
And it was flat land and everything. Oh, my gosh. It was sad.
Okay.
Adjust AI acceptance of embassies to be a bit more like they already do for delegations.
What's with these two points next to each other? Isn't that one patch note?
What I would like to see is the, hey, can I send you a delegation? No. Can I get an embassy? No. Let's declare war. And on the same turn that we declare peace, hey, can I get a delegation or an embassy? We'd be happy to.
Yep.
Yeah.
What? So in order to get friendly with you, I got to fight you. Wow, talk about a fine line between love and hate. But okay. In evaluating deals, the AI will mark elements that are unacceptable at any price and expose that to the player.
Including all the deals they send to you.
Yeah.
There's a fun screw-up for the patch.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that one.
It's a deal. I don't want it, though.
That's great.
Yeah.
Great talk.
Like, okay, bye-bye, dumbass.
And, of course, it's one of those things that will superimpose on the turn rollover, and it's like, can I just hit escape? Can I just be done with this now? Can I unmute you? Is that possible? Darn.
Although, amusingly, if you hit the what will this take, it'll leave the same deal and then allow for accepting. So there's something flawed in the diplomacy code there.
Oh, definitely.
That an acceptable deal is being given, and it's the UI is screwed up. That's the part I'm talking about.
Been rejected and accepted.
Yeah. Well, no, you see, they're saying is they don't accept it if they have to ask you for it. They want you to ask, and then they will accept graciously.
But they're telling you what they want you to ask.
Beg us for it.
So we're getting problems told.
Well,
notice me.
They know what they want, what they really, really want. And, of course, the other thing, and in a war situation, it's, hey, can we just get white peace? This sucks. Absolutely not. What about if I ask for this city? Okay.
Yeah. There's really screwy stuff going on there.
You earned this city. You must take it.
You must take it. It's a point of honor. That's what it is. It's a point of honor. What? Ay, ay, ay. Here's a patch note point that I would like more information on. Maybe it'll be realized once I actually start playing, now that the patch has arrived. Improve ability to utilize city-states beyond their suzerainty.
Yeah, they don't just go, I want to be suzerain of this city-state, so here is 20 envoys. They will actually spread out their envoys to get the level, like the tier 3. And
oh, that's what that means. That's brilliant. Okay, that is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that would be great. If there's 10 city-states around them, that one just has 20 envoys in it.
Yep.
And it's like, hey, I get why you perhaps want to be the suzerain of that city-state. That bonus is really good, but you could have taken those and been suzerain of two others. That would have you just in a good position, if not better. But no, you absolutely must have this.
Yep.
Ugh. Oh, and as a player approaches victory, AI will become less friendly and more aggressive.
Yep.
But does that mean the AI is going to know, for example, if certain victory conditions are disabled?
Oh.
Although I like the idea. This patch might as well say the AI is going to try to win slightly more than previously.
Yeah, it's kind of it's slipping back into that balance point between being simulated threat out there that doesn't try and slow you down or win versus the actually playing to win that people keep fighting over all the time.
Well, if the ultimate end is that the disposition goes from meh to I'll be happy. And as long as we don't get to the, hey, you're trying to win the way I'm trying to win.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, we don't need that.
We don't need to return to that.
But
it's not functional. That's not what optimized MP players did.
It's also you would get the you're trying to win the way I was trying to win in Civ 5 really early in the game.
Yeah, like a couple turns into the game.
Yeah. It's like, really? I'm trying to play the game, and that's how you're trying to win? Is playing? Okay.
Like, nobody cares about that in MP. No one cares that you're trying to win the same way. They care if you are the greatest threat to win the game at present.
Yep. Pretty
easy. Time AI was not an incredible example of an AI that tries to win. People say that the experiment was attempted in 5 and failed. No. That was never put into fruition. We have yet to see in a Civ game an AI that is consistently playing like a player agent in the game attempting to win. That just has not existed yet.
Nope. At least for Civ 6, though, all the victory conditions have steps to them, so it's much easier to trigger the AI off of those steps. So, you know, if you complete a spaceport, then the AI might realize that you're trying to rip a space. So there's that.
But it's still great people who are further along in the space race as the greater threat.
Yeah.
Elsewise, under bug fixes, my eyes immediately go to district repair costs now computed properly based on both game speed and start era. Will always be 25% of the cost of creating a new district of that type.
Don't mind me as I pillage all your districts late in the game. Now you have no production. But all the district costs are super, super expensive.
Enjoy that 40-turn repair on your campus.
Yep. I'm going to use that again.
Industrial districts would be the worst. You nuke those things out with anything. Yeah. And then you don't have the production to repair it because you're relying on it for production.
Yep.
Get effed.
Oh, and perhaps my favorite. Wonders should always be repairable after they've been hit by a nuclear blast.
Exactly what kind of damage you think a nuclear blast does. If I drop a nuke on the Great Pyramid, there ain't no Great Pyramids left.
There might be.
Just rebuild the pyramids.
Actually, the pyramids are built better than some modern stuff.
Yeah, you would have to hit them pretty close to directly.
Not. The point kind of stands is that you're a nuclear blast, really.
I understand gameplay versus realism, but always repairable.
They were supposed to be repairable. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That was the mechanic. They were supposed to be repairable, but they weren't always.
I could see the difference between being able to repair it if it got hit with one of the early nukes versus an ICBM.
Even in an ICBM, like, the problems caused by that are usually the blast radius itself will, yes, that will kill you if you're in it, but that's a tiny piece of the damage. And if the wonder in question is something big like the pyramids and it's not in the immediate crosshairs of that, it could survive outright. Okay. You can destroy, like, a wonder pretty well outright with anything in principle, and the game leaves it repairable regardless, so I don't have a problem with that.
You should be able to blow it. Wonders with cannons.
So, like, okay, you take something like the Colossus and you hack that down and it falls in the water. You're not just going to quote unquote repair that.
Yeah, you're basically going to be rebuilding it at that point.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's not a nuclear blast, but dragging something that size out of the water, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Especially pre modern, like, it's impossible.
Yeah. Your medieval era, you do something like that, not so much.
Even, like, early industrial, there's no equipment to do that. You're a bone. At best, you could break it apart and bring it back up and recast it or something. It'd be a nightmare.
Yeah, you got it up there in the first place.
Yeah, but, I mean, at that point, you essentially are rebuilding it outright. It's not just a repair, so to speak.
Yeah,
like, the first project is a reclamation project for some materials. Gives you some production or something.
Yeah.
That would have been nice.
Yeah, it's fine. We don't need, like, super high detail on wonder damage versus repair. Mm-hmm.
Get anything back when you fail on a wonder would be nice.
It's okay. The bestest bug fix line is additional bug fixes.
All some of those were picked up in the other thread, but not all of them. There's probably quite a few.
Oh, yeah. The best bug fixes are the one step forward, two steps back. So bug fixes beget more bug fixes. Now, in terms of Senate conversation, we, of course, have the As and Against series, and we've got Nubia on here. I think we've already discussed in the news, not only talking about their particulars, but talking about playing as Nubia. So what do you do about playing against them, particularly their agenda?
You laugh at them and then walk away. Because it's the AI. So.
Well, can't that work for any civ?
Well, if you want to be friends with them, keep building districts.
Yep. Probably going to your max district count anyway in most cases.
Yeah.
AI's agenda is to always try to keep the maximum number of districts in each city and respects other civs who do the same. If you are building districts, you're good. There's that.
And districts are kind of important in this game. Regardless of which ones you're choosing, you should probably be somewhere near this.
Sort of depends on what you're doing. If you're doing mass conquest or whatever, then you maybe not, but...
Even then, you can toss them in. I mean, yeah, it doesn't really matter after a couple civs go down.
Particularly if the cities you are conquering have the districts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm keeping up. No problem.
Yep. Yeah. Or, like, so, you actually want to keep the city versus not, because if you don't have the city, then you don't have to worry about the maximum number of districts in that pile of smoldering ash. So, that just depends.
Yeah. But, in general, as long as you are building... She will not care so much about you or be friendly, which is okay, because then now there's an AI that is friendly to the builders. I guess
feel like
that.
She's friendly to everybody that's playing decently.
Yeah.
It's like, aside from crucial military units, which you can get a decent count of that fast enough, there's only a handful of buildings that are really competitive with districts and utility.
Yeah. Otherwise, really, the only thing that stands out on Nubia that's different is the whole archer rush thing, and AI's not really great at just mass archer rush, so if you wait, or just bring a bunch of horses, you'll just deal with their archer spam.
Yeah, I suppose she would be a little unpleasant to fight super early because of that, though, because AI will build them, and she will not stop if she has 50% production. There's going to be a lot of those suckers. Unless you have to take her out early, you probably just want to wait a little bit and kill her at nights or something.
Yep.
And if you're maximizing the number of districts that you'd want to be doing anyway, you're already placating her, even though she's right there.
Yeah.
So her gender really helps in that respect. It's like, oh, she's next to me. Well, if I just keep doing what I would be doing anyway, and I'm looking at somebody else, then I should be fine, until the point that she's not a threat. Next on Civilization 6 Sims, speaking of DLC,
Persia, interestingly enough, looking at their abilities, you probably want to do a lot of trade routes. Their agenda is an opportunist. I know we were talking about how to play as Persia, but jumping forward how to play against them. The surprise war, if you want to get on his good side, just surprise war people.
You know, it only piss off Scythia, but whatever.
Yeah. Does that count if you declare a surprise war on them as well? Do they like you better? But
they hate you less. That's all I hate you.
But, I mean, I think the goal, if you're playing as Persia, is definitely, you know, spam as many trade routes as you possibly can.
Internal, even.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I think you're a little off. The first thing you do with all your trade routes is make roads out to the enemy. And then when those finish, you make internal trade routes for your internal cities.
If you have such cities to go to. If you have such cities to go to, yes.
Well, if you have an enemy to go kill, you have cities to go to.
Yeah, you don't want to be sending the trade route while you're fighting them. So, yeah, you do it. Order of operations dictates.
Whether you're Persia or not, if you've got an enemy near you and you just like, I'd like to be able to get to their cities faster, then, yeah, you're going to go ahead and construct a trade route to them first. I was just thinking internally, within your empire, if it's, well, I could build this trade route to, say, this city-state, but with all the extra bonuses I can get from internal, I don't want to go take out that city-state, then I'm just going to leave that alone, or, oh, crap, I'm on an island by myself and there's no immediate AI. But yes, order of operations, keep in mind that there's an AI that you want to take out. Yeah, road to them first.
Although our ancient roads don't help that much if you've got planes only, like, between you, so how much of a priority I put on that is dependent.
That's when you're +2 movement from the first 10 turns of declaring a surprise war. It's just like, ancient roads. We don't need no stinking roads.
They can be nice, though. If you don't have good terrain for moving around, it's a non-trivial thing to set up. So, like, in some situations, it is absolutely worth it. Like, you are hurting yourself pretty significantly by not doing it. So, it depends how much you should prioritize that.
And so that's kind of your goal. And with the surprise war bonus, with the trade route bonus, I mean, basically what you probably want to do is just kind of go hit a few sieves early on, do a bunch of trade routes as much as you can, and just kind of go with that sort of philosophy early on in the game.
Unique abilities, atrophies, so you're going to get +1 trade route capacity with a political philosophy civic. You're going to get another trade route capacity when you research currency, and you're at 3 now. So then you're going to receive +2 gold and +1 culture for routes between your own cities on top of the bonuses that you would already be getting, for instance, production or food. And then routes built in your territory are 1 level more advanced than usual. And, of course, you're going to be constructing those roads in between your cities as your trade routes are completing, so you can move your units to the frontiers of your empire more quickly to be able to defend yourself, so defensively offensive or offensively defensive, as the case may be. And then what is that unique unit of theirs that you can move along these minted roads?
Hey, Dan.
It's an immortal, which is, you know, replaces the swordsman. Has some range attacks. It's supposedly a melee unit. But, you know, it's got ability to basically be a pseudo-archer in terms of your surprise war attribute that you have. It makes it kind of ability to immediately start having a kind of a mix of an archer-slash-swordsman type unit. Combat strength is a little bit less than a swordsman, but having both abilities allows for some interesting tactics, especially when you're jumping in and trying to take over a civ that didn't realize that you were about to do that.
Yeah, you can have those units in front, and you can have your ranged units and or siege units in behind for protection. And dear Persian AI, it was quite amusing you moving in a whole bunch of immortals to take my city. Yeah, that didn't work out so well for you. You were able to continue to bombard it, but you couldn't actually take the city.
This is a strange unit,
yep.
But it can be good, because access to +2 movements is by itself an amazing ability. That is very, very strong for Persia. So they have that going already, but this is the classical age unit, which means in contrast to standard archers, you can get boosts from great generals to it as well. So you can get to 5 movements and surround and pound cities with ranged attacks pretty easily.
You just can't take them.
You just can't take them with the immortals. So bring along a war chariot, or bring along a heavy chariot, or a horse unit, or a warrior, or something to finish the job after you've completely annihilated all the defenses. It is nice to have a sturdier archer, though. Those things do not go down as easily. And if they get the great general boost, they're really difficult to get rid of, especially because they're so friggin' fast after the surprise war. But that surprise war bonus carries all game, and it is extremely powerful.
Yeah.
The AI likes to, like, not acknowledge it being out of position tactically, too. So the ability to just lull or trash one of their cities that are on, like, some of their units on declaration is kind of nice, too. And if you declare war, then they mobilize a little bit compared to if you don't. So,
And then with no penalties to yields in occupied cities, or more critically, declaring a surprise war only counts as formal war for the purposes of warmongering and war weariness. Oh, man, all the more reason for that early squish of the person that you're next to.
Well, depends on how early, because super early, there's no penalty for surprise war either, so...
Eh?
Really, it's about the medieval era where the surprise versus formal starts being important distinction.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the movement is from the beginning.
The movement is so strong that I would be willing to endure full surprise war penalties all game to utilize it. That's really good.
Oh, yeah, it's just not really a pain, because you can eventually mitigate some of that surprise war negatives. Just liberate a city-state that the AI took over, and that should help quite a bit.
Well, for the duration that you care, anyway. I mean, eventually, like, if you've taken out 2-3 civs already, you really don't care anymore.
Yeah.
It's not worth going out of your way to liberate or play nice or whatever. You might still have an ally that likes you anyway.
Yeah, might.
But if you don't, then whatever. Just kill everyone. That's the route going. You won already. Just finish it.
And then there's something that the Persians can construct that no one else can.
That's true. They have a unique tile improvement, which probably let someone else try to pronounce Paradisa? Paradisa? I don't know. Does anyone know how you say that better?
Don't look
than that?
To me for pronunciation, unless you just want me to butcher it.
Let's just call it pear and be done with it. It's a pear.
The pear. Okay.
Construct a pear.
It gives you some culture. It gives you some gold, and especially if you're adjacent to Holy Site and has Theater Square, extra gold for every adjacent commercial hub and city center. And when you get diplomatic service, you get more culture. So kind of palace-y, garden-y type thing, which is nice and shiny. Basically, the amount of culture that you're getting, and, you know, gold is pretty nice. It increases the appeal as well of the surrounding tiles, which helps for neighborhoods, national parks, seaside resorts. They're really good when placed on hills, especially.
Oh, is there anything specific to say about it? I mean, it's nice. There's so much focus on everything else that Persia has. But as for the yields from the pair, if you place it, air quotes, optimally, as compared to what else could you put on that particular hex instead, as opposed to a standard improvement. If it's just the +1 culture and +2 gold, you might be like, but then more culture for the adjacency, more gold for the adjacency.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you're doing culture victories, right, it might be a good hub.
Okay, so playing against Persia, well...
Yeah.
When they start sending trade routes to you...
put your troops all over that area.
I mean, it's not even like Civ 5 where, oh, hey, thanks for sending that trade route to me. What do I get out of it? Oh. No yields? Oh. That's always kind of a bummer, actually. So that's all the more reason to be like, yeah, no, you might want to do something about that.
That's not a trade route. That's a future war road.
You can declare war on them first. That's something you can do to them so you don't get surprise warred.
Declare on them first.
As soon as they send a trade route.
I wanted to declare for the surprise war. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Denied.
Well, you know, as soon as you get a trade route or something, the one thing you do get, you might not get yields, but you do get knowledge that they're about to do something to you. So that's something.
Yeah. Start moving units towards them using the roads and block them and then attack them.
Yeah, that's right. If you're not paying attention to them before they start roading to you, you need to do that now.
Well, I mean, are we talking humans or AI here? Because honestly, AI does not utilize the movement as effectively as you would see if you're fighting somebody.
always more so in consideration of a human as opposed to the AI. But even the AI, because, you know, even incidentally, the AI does do things correctly, if anything else. But by chance, you know, they might random into it. So don't take the chance that you're going to be random, that the AI is going to do what they should be doing when they should be doing it.
Persia is very scary in MP, from what I understand. Let's canon to Poland. Their ability is Golden Liberty, and it allows you to shower your population in freedom. Building an encampment district or fort in friendly territory claims all surrounding tiles, even from foreign cities. So go ahead and troll your friends and foes alike with that one. Have fun with it. Also, you get one military slot turned into a wild card slot, which, depending on what you're doing in the game, can be helpful, but is not harmful ever, so always a plus. As for the leader, claiming territory off another via Poland's ability converts it to your religion. Interesting. Relics provide +4 gold, +2 culture, and +2 faith. Holy sites have increased adjacency bonuses. And the leader herself, she tries to build up faith and likes civilizations that also focus on faith. So, you know, we normally wouldn't be on good terms anyway. As for the unit, comes with the mercenaries. It is the Winged Hussar. It's heavy cavalry with class, 55 strength, 4 move. The upgrade path's awkward, but if it does more damage than its enemies, it shoves units around, and if there's no eligible tile for that, it does even more damage, so get wrecked. And then the unique building is the market replacement that will give you +4 gold from the domestic trade routes or +2 from international trade routes, so pretty helpful.
Yeah, but Poland's just kind of weak.
Yeah, they're solidly mediocre.
Yeah.
There's nothing in here that really hurts them a lot, and I would argue they're better than the bottom tier stuff, but yeah. Yeah, out of all the DLC civs, this is really on the weaker side of them.
Yeah, it's on the weaker side of a bunch of stuff, really, but...
Yeah. Most of the DLC civs, you look at them and you're like, okay, this is probably a top 10 civ, but it's not really true of Poland.
Yeah. if their holy site adjacency was better than what it is, it'd be cool, at least on the faith generation side, but it's not. I mean, the Hussar is nice. It's always nice to get a good pushback. But other than that, a market replacement building is decent because you can get that up and running early.
Yeah, it's just none of the stuff carries a game for you, like a strong early UU or the Persian move bonus.
You can generate more faith, but you're not really going for religion.
Yeah, it's awkward.
Which is fine, because there does need to be follower saves that can generate faith, because they did exist in history, because the founders weren't the ones who really carried the religion after they went. But in this game, being a fast follower isn't useful. And it's really hard, too, especially if the person who founded the religion refuses to give it to you.
Take it by force, but you don't have a lot that helps you with that for most of the game.
Yep. Poland is an AI, just knock her out before she gets to Hussars and you're fine.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. Playing against her. Either that or she gets to Hussars, and then if that's a particular issue for you then in the era, then just leapfrog her in tech and then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and it's not like they're upgrading a whole bunch of stuff to like magically generate Hussars out of nowhere in a short period of time the second they get to that tech. You have a pretty good window to hammer her before that. She might build you some holy sites, too.
Yeah.
Use that for a religion.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 441-212-887659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
This was the 287th episode of Polycast. I am Imran Siddiqui, and as I said earlier, I warned Dan that I didn't know much about Civ 6, and I think I've proven it. Joined by Makaula.
So you did that on purpose.
What?
Just slightly off at the end. Back to the old days of how the hell does anyone say her name? Wait, what?
I'm bringing it back.
Here's the secret everyone needs to know. Sorry, Mackie. Mackie's name is spelled S-A-S-S.
Yes.
Makala.
I'm joined by S-A-S-S. The me and team.
Dumping tons of fun with my unique unit.
Imagine.
Somebody should congratulate Dan for achieving a life victory, but not me.
And the aforementioned Daniel Quick.
I like big acronyms and I cannot lie.
Record date?
August 5th, 2017.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth Sound Clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.